Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, I'm a TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Here's a question. Is it inevitable that we will all end up eating a diet free of meat and dairy? Well, we've made lots of podcasts looking at the seemingly unstoppable rise of the plant-based sector. We've spoken to manufacturers, innovators, people at the leading edge of the plant-based revolution. There's a simple existential basis for removing meat and dairy from our lives. Intensive farming, especially of meat, is a driver of climate change. But, of course, there's also animal welfare, land and water use, costs and health issues to throw in there as well. But realistically, are we, as a species, ever likely to completely switch to plant-based? Well, a 2019 YouGov report looking at the eating habits of people in Britain showed only 1% of people identified as being vegan and just 3% as vegetarian. Looks like a big mountain to climb, and it could take some time. But today, I'm joined by a man who not only thinks it will happen, he thinks it'll happen relatively soon. Klaus Mitchell is founder of the media platform Plant-Based News. It's a platform delivering podcasts, editorial and plant-based lifestyle news, all about making veganism and plant-based living part of the mainstream. Klaus, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Really big fan of everything you guys are doing, and it's an honour to be joining you today.
Oh, it's really exciting to talk to you. So, there's so many interesting things to ask about the future of plant-based. But before we get into that, let's just explore you. So what about Klaus? Where did your initial inspiration for plant-based news come from? And how does it fit into your own personal journey?
Yeah, so I actually became interested in the plant-based lifestyle in about 2010. I read a book called The China Study, which is basically talking about how the longest lived, you know, cultures historically predominantly ate a plant-based diet. And I became really interested in this. I predominantly went plant-based myself and I felt amazing. Within weeks, I felt like I could levitate and yeah, I just felt really light and just amazing. And this kind of triggered my interest into food and the effects of food and the effects, the deleterious effects of a current food system and what we can potentially transition into. And I really thought at one point, you know, the world would go plant-based because I felt so good. And I thought everybody needs to live like me. And so I set up Plant-Based News as a way to, you know, spread awareness about the environmental benefits of a plant-based lifestyle, the health benefits, everything that's happening to the animals. And the landscape has kind of changed. Back then, it was all about plant-based, but it was very much a minority. And now I believe the future won't necessarily go plant-based, but it'll go animal-free. And we can talk about the differences between those two words today.
So, I mean, let's think about the landscape a little bit. So, I mean, there's been so much change in the last few years. It's a bit difficult to work out where we were. Now, you founded the platform in 2015, is that right?
It launched as an online portal in 2015. I was just so convinced about the power of a plant-based diet to be the solution to so many of the issues around the world. I looked into the environmental devastation and, you know, I think before plant-based news and before I became interested in this, you kind of think, oh yeah, animals, you know, not very great for the environment, it's methane. But actually, when you look at the land use and the other deleterious effects, you know, the intensity of it, the water, the energy, the antibiotics, the hormones, you start to realize that this is at the center of a lot of the issues we're facing as a species and a society. It's just that each individual one people ignore. Nobody's really connecting the dots between all these different issues. And if they did, the future would be really clear. At the beginning, I thought the world was going to go plant-based, as I said. I've realized that that's probably utopian thinking. I don't think globally we're all collectively going to be having smoothie bowls and, you know, kale smoothies and juices and salads. I think realistically we're going to eat the same products as we do now, but with a new mode of production. So I still think people will eat meat, dairy, eggs and fish, but the mode of production will change such that an animal won't need to be exploited to produce those things. And this is not just a kind of personal opinion. According to The Economist magazine, 60% of the meat market will be made up of alternative protein by 2040. So that means 40% of the meat market will be conventional slaughter-based meat in less than 20 years. This is a huge transition, and the biggest institutions saying this will happen, and I personally think it will as well.
Yeah, certainly it seems to be heading that way. Now, just back to the platform itself, what did you want it to achieve? What was the plan? I mean, obviously you're talking about the plant-based sector, but is there an aim for it? Is it to help drive things, or are you making a stack of cash instead?
I've not made a stack of cash. It's actually, I was living at my parents' when I launched it. I was doing a master's in the genetics of human disease. And I remember the head of my department, who is a professor of cardiovascular genetics, I built up a bit of rapport with him. And I remember emailing him and saying, hey, have you heard of this study in The Lancet, a big journal, showing that you can literally reverse the progression of heart disease on a plant-based lifestyle? And I knew that, look, plant-based nutrition thing, it's never going to be adopted in a widespread way anytime soon, right? But I just thought it would be a good conversation starter. It's like, this is meant to be what he's an expert in. And not only did he not know about it, he just didn't care. And that made me really frustrated. I was like, if there are these terrible negative impacts of animal agriculture as an industry, and the plant-based lifestyle is the solution, the antidote to the current system, also can prevent and reverse some of our biggest killers, including, you know, type 2 diabetes and heart disease, and experts in this field were not even interested in that, I was like, this is really frustrating. We've got a big problem, and yeah, you can't really change that much by voting. You only vote every 5 years. You can't change that much through academia. You know, I've co-authored a paper. It's very, very difficult to do that. You have to do a PhD and lots of research. But social media is at everybody's doorstep. And every weekend I went to my parents' greenhouse and I vlogged about the latest developments in the plant-based world. So I think at the beginning of the channel, I talked about how Leonardo DiCaprio got a Cowspiracy onto Netflix, which was huge in 2015. I talked about how Tesla have ditched leather interiors in their, you know, automobiles. And there's a real kind of momentum to this movement. And I think the audience really rallied behind that. They were passionate plant-based people that found personal benefits in eating this way, but nobody was really connecting the dots saying, hey, this is the direction of travel that we're going to go in. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting today to kind of talk about the evolution of the quote-unquote movement, because it really, really has evolved. As I said at the beginning, it was all about, you know, smoothies and kale juices and salads and stuff like that. And I think that was a utopian vision. There are lots of sort of like vloggers and influencers in the space that have done really well, but now they've kind of plateaued. And what we're seeing now is a rise of the V word, vegan everywhere, you know, on buses around London, veganery is doing really, really well. However, the grassroots movement is kind of plateaued, and I think it's being taken over by big business, and that's not necessarily a good or negative thing. It's just the way it's kind of gone.
And this is the way that a lot of these sort of changes happen. Yes, you know, incrementally at first, and then it becomes bigger. So, I mean, you use an interesting word, movement. You know, and that sort of implies that it's sort of about shared ethics and about, you know, care. But things are changing, aren't they? There's a huge amount of competition. There's money, manufacturing, R&D. Huge food companies are kind of working alongside startups that may have been ethical, ethically started. That doesn't mean that the huge food companies can't have ethics. But given this sort of diversity of approaches and the entry of large sums of money, is it still a collective? Is it still a movement? And are there still shared ethics?
It's a really great question. I mean, we just did a fundraiser at Plant-Based News late last year. And so we raised over £1 million through about 100 investors. So I've spoken to a lot of investors in this space. Ethics, sustainability is definitely at the forefront of what they're thinking about, 100% for our company. For other food brands, I think there is just a feeling that this is going to be the future in terms of efficiency. Because when you take the animal out of the equation, you don't have, you know, imagine the process of having to not just confine an animal, but also grow crops to feed the animal, deal with the feces, the slaughter, and other logistical challenges. Forget for a second that it's actually quite disgusting. It's also a bad business equation. And so I think a lot of investors are getting into this because they feel like, actually, this is the future in terms of just making food more efficient. And that is exactly why alternative products, whether it's plant-based products or cultivated meat, precision fermented dairy, in some cases, not all of them, particularly the plant-based side, they're just as affordable compared to, you know, the meat counterpart. And that's without any of the enormous subsidies that the traditional industries get. So if this is a new sector and there's already in some areas, not all areas, but some areas, price parity, that's a really good sign. And that's exactly why investors are getting excited. Just to give you a couple of examples, the largest meat processing company in the world, JBS, recently invested $100 million into cultivated meat. And the largest food and beverage company in the world, Nestlé, also recently announced that they will be releasing an alternative protein to replace every single animal protein in the next few years. So this is not a minority. This is definitely a mainstream phenomenon.
Yeah, and it's become part of a lot of corporate social responsibility reporting in companies. And do you reckon, I mean, I think it'll probably start off as a little bit of box ticking, but I think it's genuinely the engine of positive change. Now, do you think the same?
I think so, and you used the interesting word there, change, and I think you said positive change. We've got to acknowledge first and foremost that like change is the constant. If you look at writing, it required a pen and paper before the computer. If you look at airmail required what pigeons in the past, right? And now it's airmail. If you look at transportation, to use another example, it required, you know, the horse in the past, and now it's the engine. It's just about making things more efficient. And I think we've got a capacity to hate change as humans, but actually, if you think about things objectively, change is the constant, and it's the only thing that happens. And it's not just a case of change being nice with food and being positive, as you said, but it's necessary for us to, you know, avoid climate catastrophe, basically.
Now, a lot of the changes that you're talking about, so I mean, we're talking really about things like cultured meat and different ways of creating a meat, you know, a protein experience. A lot of them at the moment are heavily reliant on technology. Does that mean that it's very much a wealthy Western country change? Do you think that it's relevant to the developing world?
So the statistic that I talked about earlier about JBS, who's the largest meat processing company in the world getting into this, they're actually based in Brazil. So there's a lot of activity there going on to this end. And in China, the Ministry of Agriculture has built alternative protein into their next official five-year plan, which was actually corroborated this year by President Xi when he revealed that China would be exploiting this food tech space as a priority in order to effectively feed their growing population. So this is no longer just Western, vegan, hippie, environmental people. This is politicians around the world, governments around the world, and business leaders indicating this is not just a trend, but a transformation in our food system. And that's one of the main messages we're trying to get across at Plant Based News. This isn't just like some nice to have option. You know, this is inevitability of where we're going to go as a species. Like, I don't know whether it'll be plant-based products. I don't know whether it'll be cultivated meat that takes the market by storm. I don't know whether it'll be precision fermented dairy or microprotein. There's so many technologies and foods out there, processed and unprocessed. But what I do know is two things. Number one, the current system of production will be superseded for all of the reasons that we mentioned at the beginning. And number two, business-to-business disruptions will speed up that transition. Because I think we all talk about the consumer driving change, but actually, as I've alluded to, companies are just going to find animal-free alternatives that are better for their bottom line, that are easier to manufacture. And I think the business-to-business disruptions, perhaps without people even realizing, will be the ones that prevail.
Now, you mentioned a whole range of different sort of systems there. And I wondered, what's the most exciting area at the moment? I mean, it seems to change so often. You know, there's a sudden leap in technology, but you know, microprotein is really in algae production, all these different things. So, you know, there is a heck of a lot going on, but sometimes you think it's more of a wing and a prayer, although people are putting money behind the things that seem ridiculous. What do you find personally the most exciting area right now? And I'm saying this, you know, this may well change by next week, but right now, what excites you?
Definitely precision fermented dairy. So British billionaire Jim Mellon a few months ago came out and he said traditional dairy is just going to be transformed, not because of our exploding, you know, plant-based milk market that we're seeing in supermarkets and in our society, particularly in the West, but because of something called precision fermented dairy, which is basically real dairy made from microbes instead of mammary glands in fermentation tanks. Like the ones you get in breweries, you know, how you produce beer, basically. And this is really exciting because, number one, it's already happening in a way not many people realize, but in over 90% of dairy cheeses in Western countries, there's an ingredient called rennet, which is a fermented animal enzyme, as I said, in over 90% of dairy cheeses. This is produced without the animal. And nobody has an issue with 1% of their dairy cheese having this ingredient, but it just makes it easy for the manufacturer. This is so exciting because already in Hong Kong and the United States, precision fermented dairy has passed regulatory approval. And as I said, in over 90% of dairy products, it's already there globally, right? So there's not going to be any regulatory bottlenecks. It's bio-identical. So, it's going to pass regulatory approval because it's not like cultivated meat where you have to use stainless steel, big factories, and it's just all very complicated and there's a lot of innovation required. There is innovation in precision fermented dairy, but it's quite simple to produce. And this has come up in the last few years. And there's a recent survey by RethinkX, and they predicted that precision fermented dairy could transform over 90% of the dairy industry in the United States in the next 10 to 15 years. And that for me is like super exciting because I've always known about the effects of the dairy industry, the fact that, you know, 65% of the world's population are lactose intolerant, the links to cancer and greenhouse gas emissions. But this is a solution to the environmental impact of that industry. And it's not about saying this will disrupt dairy. This is about kind of transforming it and making it more efficient so everybody can get the benefits they had before without the negative implications of the traditional industry.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I guess we should spend a few moments really talking about traditional industries and culture and jobs and the pushback from lots of people who say that change on that sort of scale to the landscape, to the countryside would be devastating. What are your thoughts on that?
I think whenever there's change, there's going to be collateral damage, but there's also going to be opportunity, right? And doing the right thing, doing the thing that saves the environment, doing the thing that's really beneficial for public health. You know, 3 in 4 novel infectious diseases that have emerged in the last 30 years have all come from animals. And if you look at antibiotic resistance, well, the leading driver of that is, you know, farmed animals. 80% of the total antibiotics produced around the world are given to farmed animals. So this is a huge, huge problem. For sure, if we transitioned like tomorrow to a vegan world or an animal-free world in terms of our food system, some farmers will go out of business, but that's probably better than us losing, you know, us becoming extinct.
On balance, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so you just have to weigh it up, right?
Another issue that crops up a fair amount at the moment is the cost. Now, a lot of plant-based food is still quite expensive. Plant-based meat alternatives are quite expensive. There's a cost of living crisis going on. How do you think the present economic conditions will affect the plant-based market? Are we already seeing an effect, do you think?
I think we are. I think last week there was something in the Daily Mail or the Mirror, I can't remember which, talking about how beef and pork are off UK school menus last week, and that's just because of the cost of living crisis, right? I'm personally surprised, though, that meat and dairy is still so affordable. But we know the reason is because it's subsidized to the tune of billions. In the UK, 90% of animal farmers' profits subsidized. It's absolutely insane. And if we had a level playing field, you know, dairy and meat and fish, these industries would be out of business. The UN said a few years ago that you could end world hunger with $30 billion. I think Elon Musk responded to that and said, hey, how can you do that? And if you can, I'll do it. So I don't think they know the actual way, but they predicted it'll be about $30 billion to end world hunger. The fishing industry is subsidized globally by $35 billion each year. In the US, meat and dairy is subsidized to the tune of $38 billion each year. It's absolutely insane. And it's artificially reducing the price of meat and dairy. So the fact that they're still having price issues and people still can't afford it just shows how expensive this industry is.
So what do you see as the main obstacles that need to be kind of shoved out the way to achieve a fully fledged plant-based revolution? Because we are still on 1% vegan, 3% vegetarian.
Absolutely. And I think it's important for people to realize that this isn't about making the world vegan. I think people just transition to a more animal-free food system, perhaps without realizing it. And this is why this transition is so exciting, because in a way it's the most remarkable change that is sort of happening on a business-to-business level without people realizing, and the least remarkable as well, because it's just going to be so seamless. These products are going to literally replicate the traditional products. So I don't think when the world transitions, people aren't going to consider this a vegan or plant-based thing. This is going to be the same as before, but it's just about changing the mode of production. It's like, you know, we all remember the world of paper roadmaps, right? And I know somebody who, like, my uncle still loves using his paper roadmap, but for the vast majority of us, we really don't like using paper roadmaps. We use GPRS, right? And that transition happened kind of seamlessly. And I think the same thing is going to happen with food, or MP3 players to music streaming, or CDs to music streaming. Like, none of us really can remember that happening, but it happened really quickly. Why? Because the end consumer wanted it. And yeah, sure, some people miss CDs, but the reality is the vast majority of us hate the clutter of CDs. And I think the same thing is going to happen with food. We're not really going to realize this is happening, but I think when it does, it'll be like, wow, why didn't we shift over earlier? How on earth did we do this to these animals? And how on earth was the industry standard? For now, it's just a bacon and cheese sandwich. But I think when this has ended, as it will, because the world is transitioning, whether we like it or not, I think we'll acknowledge the true scale of the injustice in the same way we can't really look at other behaviors that we did in the past that we were appalled by.
Now, in terms of actually making these changes happen there, I mean, obviously, there's a huge amount of pushback from lots of industries. One of the current things that we've heard about is France deciding to ban the use of meat names on plant-based food products from October 22. Do you see this as a sort of a part of the big battleground, the marketing, the perception of the differences?
I feel like they're feeling threatened, right? I don't know what you think about this, but I mean, they've got no issue with peanut butter. Why they not got an issue? Because it's not a threat to them, right? But they're banning meat terms in supermarkets because they're like, this is new, people hate change, and it's a threat to our industry. And I think they're losing track of the change. You know, the company's producing alternative protein. They're not saying there should be any kind of radical overhaul in the way in which we live our lives. It's just about giving our society and giving our species a better chance of survival in the long term, because this is really, really serious, and it goes beyond just the environment. As I said, this is about animal welfare. This is about public health crises. Like, we talked about pandemic risk there earlier. We talked about antibiotic resistance. This is really, really serious. And I don't think the current industry see this. They're trying to fix the symptoms of the problem. They're trying to give cows seaweed so there's not as much methane. Doesn't stop the deforestation. It doesn't get to the root of the problem. So this is just about transforming current industry in a very practical way. It's not radical at all.
And so on one side, you've got countries like France, you know, banning meaty names. On the other hand, you've got some territories which are a bit more far-sighted, and they have interesting messaging on plant-based. And there are obviously places like Singapore which are pushing ahead by allowing new plant-based foods to be sold. Which ideas do you think are going to be dominating this whole sector, certainly in terms of the message, before we talk about the countries that are best placed for it? What are the messages that you think are important to tackle?
I think people are going to rally behind this idea that anything processed is really, really bad. And I guess they have a point, because generally speaking, when you process food, it has a negative health implication and effect. Except the companies producing plant-based products like the Beyond Burger or Impossible Foods or cultivated meat or precision fermented dairy, for the most part, they're not saying like, hey, this is the gold standard for health. They're just saying like, hey, this is a really realistic, scalable way for you to slightly adapt your diet, but in a way that really will have an impact. And as I said, like, this is not just my own opinion. I mentioned The Economist magazine there. 60% of the meat market we made up of alternative protein. Like, that's like a mainstream, almost institution, right? Talking about that. And the split that they come up with in terms of alternative protein is about 65% plant-based. Cultivated meat, 35% plant-based. But yeah, going back to your question, I think people are going to, you're going to freak out that this is processed. But the question I always ask back to that is like, well, what about the current system makes you think is healthy? And then when people say, oh, but I don't trust cultivated meat or these plant-based products, it's like, hey, we're not saying like you need those products. But also, if you're eating, you know, processed meat and dairy, like, what about that system makes you trust it? So I think there'll be some pushback from that standpoint, but I think it will just lead to kind of awareness of our current system and why it's kind of not very good for the environment or public health, all of the issues that we've spoken about.
Okay, so what about the places in the world that are most forward thinking? You know, we've talked to people in Singapore, in Israel. Obviously, there's a huge amount of technology being sunk into it in the US. Are there places, though, where government and industry and media and consumers have aligned and produced an environment where plant-based innovation is really powering ahead?
I think a few months ago, the USDA in America invested several million into cultivated meat. And that's kind of a sign of things to come because it's still not past regulatory approval in the US. In Singapore, cultivated meat is currently now being sold, and they want to be a leader in this space because of the, you know, the pandemics and infectious disease outbreaks that they've notoriously had in that country. President Xi has backed food technology like precision fermented dairy and cultivated meat. I think the Ministry of Health in China in 2016 say they aim to cut meat consumption by 50%. And that's because they're seeing the unrelenting barrage of climate crises that are happening all around the world and saying like, hey, we can't be part of this. Also because their health bills are just exploding out of control. So there are kind of signs from governments around the world that, you know, this is a change we want to see. However, follow the money, right? When you look at the subsidies that are going into traditional meat and dairy, which are wreaking havoc on our environment, that speaks volumes about how much work we need to do. Like, as I said, 90% of animal farmers' profits in the UK are subsidized. So if, for example, a farmer turns over £12,000 in revenue in the UK, it'll be topped up by £44,000. It just doesn't make any sense. And sooner or later, this industry is going to crack. And sooner or later, the government won't be able to keep bailing out these industries. And once that happens, I think that's when we'll see the big transition. And governments will be like, yeah, hey, we can't just, this isn't about lip service anymore. We really need to support plant-based provisions, infrastructure. We really, really need to support, you know, alternative protein, because this is really the thing that's going to save the day. I don't mean to sound like too puritanical or preachy. It's just that when you look at, despite what the media says, when you look at the effect of this industry, it is really, really pervasive. If you look at the latest study making the link between greenhouse gas emissions and the food system, they say 35% of greenhouse gas emissions globally are from animal agriculture. Now, considering that is significantly more than all forms of transportation combined, this shows what a big issue this is, right?
Mm. And when we're looking at the sort of the international landscape of this, where does Britain fit in? I mean, I get the sense that the consumers are interested, but things like regulatory approval and things like, you know, are we forward thinking enough, and does that need to change?
Yeah, I was at an alternative protein sort of conference meetup at House of Parliament several months ago, one evening, and I was talking to some of the movers and shakers in this field, and they're struggling to get the same press that the California and Silicon Valley companies are getting, who are raising literally like hundreds of millions of pounds even before they've even got a product to market. However, it seems like in terms of the research, we're leading the way in this country. So it's kind of research first. There will be pushback from farmers because this is meant to be a really high welfare state. But I think, you know, what we do to animals in this country in 2022, when we, you know, artificially inseminate them, when we exploit their reproductive organs, when we take away the baby shortly after birth so we can take their milk. Like, I think if anybody saw the realities of these industries, even though it's meant to be high welfare, they definitely still say that, you know, this industry needs reform. But I think there's definitely going to be some pushback in that area.
Yeah. Okay, so my last question then is, so we talked a little about your excitement for precision fermentation as a new technology, but what are the big surprises that you think people would be really blown away by? Is it the figures? Is it the statistics? Is it the technology that's upcoming? What are the things that surprise you most about your work?
I just think this whole movement and lifestyle is really going to snowball. A survey in January 2022 said that a third of Brits are interested in becoming vegan. Now, let's just pretend that study was fudged or exaggerated. Like, a third of Brits knowing what vegan is, like, that 10 years ago just would have been completely different, right? So the conscious consumer is growing massively. And I'm also really conscious about the potential of the unconscious consumer, because I always say to people, like, If you're concerned that you can't make a difference, I really hope you remember the 20,000 number, because that's the number of animals that are slaughtered per person on average throughout their lifetime. You know, that's 20,000 animals with a central nervous system to fill, eyes to see, animals that are so similar to us. And if they switched away from an animal-based diet, they can have a real effect. It's a lot of animals. And that's what I'm trying to do. Like, I really want to inspire people to kind of make the connection. But I really think that the real change is going to happen from business to business level, where society and the food system will transition without us even realizing. And then we'll look back on our current system and go, how on earth did we do that to these animals? And like, how on earth was it industry standard? So yeah, just to summarize the point, I think the conscious consumer is going to grow massively. And then the unconscious consumer, like people that don't even realize what they're doing, and they're just going to eat more and more animal-free foods like precision fermented dairy, which I'm very excited about, and cultivated meat and plant-based products. And I think it's just becoming more normalized. You just kind of see sustainability and ESG space, which you mentioned before, is kind of growing. There's lots more initiatives around. The V word is on buses. You know, plant-based is kind of everywhere. It's like, I just feel like this conscious consumer is growing, you know, and it's really, really exciting to see.
Yeah, it's a big change of the foot. Okay, just last question then. What's next for plant-based news?
So plant-based news is rocking and rolling. We're reaching around 80 million impressions a month, which is awesome. And we're going to try and grow the team. We've got documentaries coming out on our YouTube page, potentially some big ones, which I can't mention yet. And our end of year wrap-up film. Instagram is our biggest platform. So we've got 1.2 million followers there. We kind of give daily updates on there. And then, of course, our website, plantbasednews.org, is migrating to another server. So we're going to put lots more articles out there, and also some ancillary campaigns, creating awareness about sustainability as well. So just kind of like more of what we're doing. But yeah, it's really exciting to see you guys go digital as well. I was a big fan of the event. I went in 2017 and I had a great time, and it's great to see you guys over at digital a bit more.
Exactly. Well, hopefully we'll see more of you as well. So Klaus Mitchell, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, there are hundreds more at foodmatterslive.com. And remember, if you enjoy the Food Matters Live podcast, you can subscribe on your preferred platform so you never miss an episode. And why not leave us a review? Thank you so much for joining us.